Hello, ladies and gentlemen, this is Claudia Monacelli. My avid followers knew this podcast as Pleasure Seeking, the Pleasure Seeking Podcast, named after my book, The Magic of Pleasure Seeking. As soon as it's available for pre-order, I'll announce it here. Enjoy your listening. Here I am with a new guest, Tamara Pincus, and Tamara is quite unique. She has a background as a clinical social worker. She's worked for over 15 years with that in a mental health treatment, and she's maintained at the same time a private practice specializing in sex therapy since 2011. She's a member of the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. And she has a specialty in working with kinky, poly, and LGBTQ clients. Tamara, I know you're listening to me. Say hello first to everyone before I go on.
Hi, everyone.
I just wanted to break in there and say how long it took me to be able to say LGBTQ, and I can't say it until I see it. And Tamara has her practice has a commitment to racial justice, and she has specifically experience using cognitive behavioral psychodynamic mindfulness and imago approaches. I'd like to know about that first thing in therapy with individuals and people in relationships. She has a certification in working with co-occurring mental health and substance abuse disorders. So you can tell, I mean, she has a lot on her plate. She's worked for agencies for the homeless and chronically mentally ill, and has worked in direct service management and quality improvement. Now, there's so much more that I could say about her, but I'd rather have her speak for herself. Thank you for coming today, Tamara. I wanted, first of all, for you to tell us where you come from, in the sense of who were you when you were in your teens? You know, those difficult years, you know, early high school that no one ever wants to go back to. Usually they're the formative years.
Yeah, I mean, so high school was a terrible time. So we moved to Buffalo, New York, like in eighth grade. And so they sent me to this fancy private school, and I was already kind of a rebel. My parents. And I was already kind of a rebel. So I always, you know, dressed in black, and it was goth time. So, you know, I had my deep red lipstick, and I drew a Jewish star once, and everybody became convinced that I was a devil worshiper. So I had a lot of experience with being an outcast, and I was bullied so much that I ended up switching to a different high school.
Oh, did the bully
for my junior and senior year?
Do you think the bullying occurred because you wore that kind of lipstick, and, you know, because of the things that identified you?
So I think that there were a few things. I mean, I was definitely also bullied because I was fat. There was a lot of like pretending to ask me out, but the idea that anybody would actually ask me out was so laughable that it was funny. I mean, and I already knew that I was queer. I came out as bisexual at 16. I
Brava.
did a lot of
Bravissima.
queer activism in my
Even that young, you were an activist, even that young.
Oh
16,
yeah,
17,
definitely in
wow.
high school. I mean, I think that because I'm bisexual and because I was dating a guy at the time, people didn't take me seriously. So all
Right.
of my lesbian and gay friends were like getting death threats on their locker and getting beat up after school. And because nobody took me seriously as a
Yeah.
queer person, I could say these things that other
Yeah.
people couldn't say, and I did.
Wow.
And yeah.
Well, see, that's and to my mind, I was a cheerleader. I dated the football captain, the kind of thing. And it was terrible. Those the cliques and what they say and what they do, and they have the class president and most likely to succeed and all of those things. It's a difficult time. It's a difficult time. Do you, and I'm leading you to the present, obviously, in some way, but do you think this brought you to the type of work you're doing now? Led you to this?
I mean, I do think so. I think there were other things that brought me to this too. Like I knew I was kinky in high school too.
Yeah, but
You
how
know, I
kinky?
didn't know polyam.
How kinky? You know, because for me in high
What, you
school,
know, all
how
the
much,
romance,
how much, you know,
all
how
the
much
romance
can you?
novels had kidnapping. I was all about it. I was like bringing my boyfriend the things to tie me up with.
For you.
I found a copy of one of the Marquis de Sade books. That was less good. Less good. But I mean, I had, you know, I probably started reading, you know, romance novels with kidnapping when I was like, I don't know, 11, 12.
Well, wait a minute, wait a
I hope
minute.
my mom doesn't listen to this podcast.
No. Hi, Mom. The ro when you say I missed something here because you say romance novels with kidnapping, and that to me sounds normal. What maybe I'm culturally not getting it?
Right, because that is normal culturally. And yet that's also kinky. Like when you're into the kind of thing where one person holds power over another and one person's tying another one up, like that is fundamentally kinky and it's also normal, which is
Yeah,
why
but
when you ask
don't.
most people, like, do they have kinky fantasies? Like 95% of them do think about spanking or think about bondage or but we think of it as this weird thing. So I'm pretty out about being
But
kinky
you know, that
this
whole
way.
thing about power, it would, in my mind, that's the fun of sex. Don't people get it that it is a power play? You know, I would
I
imagine
mean,
that's accepted.
it's a big part of sex for most people, not everybody, but I don't think people necessarily talk about the power parts of it.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times it's not negotiated well. Like I think there are parts of it that are definitely like have a power differential, and I think a lot of times people don't even know how to negotiate those things.
Yeah. Let's say there is apart from the work that you do as a sex educator and a consultant or counselor, you do have a link to mental illness. Is that did that come in? How did that come into the picture?
Right. So, in order to become a certified sex therapist, you have to be a therapist first,
Right.
right? So, you have
Ah.
to get either a master's in social work or a master's in counseling or something that gives you some qualifications as a therapist. And then, in order to work as an independent therapist without being supervised by somebody else, you have to work in the field for a certain number of years under supervision. Well, as it turns out, when I got out of school, there were literally no sex therapy group practices where you could
Wow.
be hired to do sex
How
therapy
long
under somebody
ago?
else's supervision.
How long ago was this?
2004.
Oh, wow. That's so surprising.
So I actually have a sex therapy group practice now. I have a number of clinicians who work for me who are working towards sex therapy certification. I'm actually as in addition to being a certified sex therapist, I'm also a certified sex therapy supervisor. So people can get supervision from me and then become certified sex therapists. So I do supervision both for people who work for me and for people who work at other agencies who want to do sex therapy, so that they can learn the skills they need to do that. But when I was getting started, there was no way to just follow that path directly.
And
So
how
I
did you
had to
do
get a
that?
job. I got a job at Community Connections, which does public mental health with the chronically mentally ill, mostly people on Medicaid or people without insurance at all. And we would do case management, go out in the community, meet people where they are, take them to their doctor's appointments and
Nice.
to their
A lot of
yeah,
work.
it's really hard to work that to
It
do
is
that.
hard.
Like
It
I'm
is
not sure how
hard.
much really happens these days. And then I sort of moved up and I started doing therapy through that realm and then and intake assessments and that sort of thing. And it was really hard to break out on my own and say, like, I'm gonna give up these steady sources of income and start my own
Right.
practice. But I did.
Yeah,
And
good for
here we
you.
are,
But
10
now,
years later.
where do you go when you want help?
Well, I do have my own therapist.
Okay, there we go. I gotcha. Yeah, so it's common practice to have your own therapist, someone that you don't know or someone that you trust that was suggested to you. How does that work usually?
So in this case, somebody that I don't know. And I think ideally you want to go for somebody that you don't know outside because I think it gets complicated also if you like share clients or
Right.
like if I'm also referring you people and I see you for therapy, I feel like that's
Of
complicated.
course.
So we try not to have dual relationships. So the therapist that I see, I guess she's an
She's
introvert because she
laughing.
doesn't go to
She's
all the
laughing.
I laugh a lot. She doesn't go to all of the like therapy networking things that I go to. Like there's quite a few that I go to and some things that I organize and she's like, I'm an introvert. After work, I don't do those things. And I'm like, perfect. That's why I never see you. Perfect.
Good. Good. So now we've left high school, right? And we've talked a little bit about college and you're out the door there and now you're in working life. To get an idea, because I'm trying to think how it would be. When I have guests on that my show, I try to put myself in the shoes of a client that would come to you, right? So if I'm doing that in your case, I'm trying to think how what would bring me to you. Let's say I have a relationship, man, woman, it doesn't really matter. I have a relationship, and apparently the sex is okay. Actually, the sex seems fine, but I'm just not reaching orgasm. You know, it, regularly, it's never happened, but I know that I've never had good sex, like this kind of sex. Would that qualify to be a client of yours?
I mean, that would certainly be a pretty typical sex therapy client. I don't end up seeing a lot of those. I mean, they're certainly out there, but it's not one of the more common things that I get in my practice. I think because I do specialize in kinky poly and LGBT people, anorgasmia seems to come up less with people who are already exploring all these other sexual avenues. And you'll also find that anorgasmia is less common in people who have same-sex relationships because it seems like
All right.
the breakdown
She's
seems to be
giving me a
oftentimes
tip,
in male-female
ladies and gentlemen.
relationships.
She's telling me where to go. All right, so let me
Yeah,
put
women,
myself.
like they're paying attention to your pleasure.
Yes.
Men have to learn that because
They
men are
sure do.
taught that like sex is a thing that women give them. It's not necessarily fun for them. It might hurt, but like they should do it. But it's not like men are taught like actually, like here are the skills. Hello, this is the clitoris. Do something with
So let me put myself in a situation that's a little more common in relation to who you see. All right, so I come with the notion that we're having trouble in the bedroom, man or woman relationship, it doesn't matter. I think that I'd like to start the kinky stuff. I heard about you by word of mouth, you know, things travel, people talk. And I come to you and I think this is the first time. We have crossed the line. We've transgressed a little bit, wanting to be with other partners, the whole bit. But I want perhaps your help in telling me what would work best in the beginning and if there is a moment where you can develop into something else. Am I doing okay as a client?
Yeah, I mean, I think we want to figure out, like, what is it that you want to begin to do? Like, so we should explore, like, what are the things that you're fantasizing about? Are you looking for other partners? Are you looking for a particular kind of kink? Like, is your partner coming to the sessions or is this just you individually? Because that will affect how we work together.
Okay. So let's say I'm on my own the first session. Then we have this talk and I realize it's best if they come too. Okay, so on the first time you ask me all of these questions, I swallow that, I take notes, and then I go back to my partner and I tell them, look, we talked about this. Maybe it would be a good idea if you came to talk as well. So we're together now. You're not let off the hook.
You're together.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and then we start talking about, like, well, what are the things you guys are both fantasizing about? What are the things that make you uncomfortable? How do we explore these things in a way that feels safe to you? And also, like, which path do we want to go down? So, like, so if you're looking to just begin to explore kink with each other, then, like, I might send you to a Dungeon 101 workshop where you can go around and you can try different things with
Wait, go slow there. I just heard Dungeon 101 and then you covered it up. Come on, say, go slow. There's a Dungeon 101.
Dungeon 101.
All right, tell me.
So in Dungeon 101, and I haven't been to one in quite a while, the local dungeon in DC runs them. So you have to find your local dungeon and see if they run them. If they don't run them, then we might want to talk about, like, where you can get your education about how to do kink play safely.
Yeah.
Because it's important to not just, like, watch some porn and try to do that, because they don't discuss boundaries and consent and safety.
Right.
So you want to go to somebody who knows, like, if you want to do spanking, for instance, you want to go to somebody who will teach you how to warm up slowly. You will talk about safe words. You will talk about, you know, sort of stopping to check in with a person, even if they have safe words, because sometimes people are not able to talk when they get into a very intense, ecstatic state, either if whether they're enjoying themselves or whether they're dissociating and it feels traumatic. Sometimes people just can't talk at those times. So you need to figure out how to manage the consent process around it, how to communicate about it. And also, like, what is good practice? Like, for instance, if you're going to do spanking or flogging, you want to make sure that you don't hit the kidneys, because they can actually be damaged if you're hitting
them. I'm hurting already. That word, flogging. You know, I can see all the nails coming out.
I mean, usually most people in the kink community will use, like, a soft suede flogger. Flogging is often more about the rhythm than it is about pain. I mean, if you're talking about, like, pain, you're probably gonna use, like, a cane or, like, a bullwhip.
So many Christmas gifts. That's what
seriously.
All right, so let's with the kink came to my mind certain roles, because I see it as a game. I'm seeing it all as a game, and apparently not everyone does see it as a game. But we're talking from a therapeutical viewpoint, so the game becomes more therapeutical than a real game. I mean, maybe people who think of it as games don't come to you, but we're talking about sex, fine. And we talked about the dungeon very little, but you have experience with BDSM. Tell the audience what exactly that is. People have read about it, may see the letters, not everyone knows.
So BDSM stands for bondage, domination, and sadomasochism. And so it's both about people taking dominant and submissive roles in their sort of sexual or sometimes not even all that sexual play. And then there's also like sort of playing with intense sensation, like sometimes pain, sometimes other kinds of things that are just intense, like ice cubes or things
Okay,
like that.
right.
And then there's also the sort of bondage aspect of like tying people up. Sometimes there's a the rope bondage has become very popular. There's a lot
Really?
of people into doing these like
Really?
complicated different kinds of ties. And that's often you'll find that like called either shibari or kinbaku. And there's a lot of ways to tie people up that even aren't very restrictive. Like you can tie like a chest harness or something like that, where like person can totally move around, but they still have the sense of being held by rope. So a lot of people like that as well.
Wow. Have you found in your practice, because you mentioned that people go into roles of domination or of being the opposite of domination, being dominated. Have
Submission.
you, yeah, submission. Have you ever found that those roles are reversed in the same people? Do people
So
come
there's
and they'd like to switch roles?
definitely there are some people who identify as switches. So there are people who will do different roles. And some people will do different roles in the same relationships. And sometimes people who are switches will have one partner who's a dominant and another partner who's a submissive, and they'll sort of do different roles in different relationships.
Is that fairly common? To
I
find the
think so, yeah.
switches?
And I find that oftentimes people who sort of come into the scene with one role, so in their early 20s, they're like really drawn to it and they want to do this thing, that like over time, once they've been in the scene for a long time, they'll end up trying the other thing. Somebody said to me recently, and this was Melina Williams, she's a pretty famous sex educator. She said, the time will come when there's just two submissives at a party who don't have anybody to play with and want to do something, and then like something happens. So yeah.
I can see that. The show must go on, really. The show must go on. So let's see how a typical day, Tamara's typical day is. Because you have a network, it seems from the description of the people you work with, it's sort of organized where many th different things come. There are people who are being followed, people who are, taking your courses or being helped by you in some way. What does your day look like? A typical day, today, for example.
Well, today is a Friday, so I don't see clients on Friday. So it's mostly like
Oh.
my own stuff. And my day is pretty varied these days because so my typical work includes working with clients, and most of the clients that I work with now, I've worked with for a long time.
Ah.
So they're mostly people who are kinky or poly or queer, or just who wanted a really open-minded therapist. Who and oftentimes they just have depression or anxiety or issues in their relationships. So it's often not the sort of, come in the door, like we have this problem, how do we fix it in the short term kind of thing. It's more long-term work that I'm doing with the clients that I see now. Then I also, I have all these people I do clinical supervision with. So
Yeah.
they're seeing these people who are walking in the door with
Right.
Cross-dressing or diaper fetish or whatever, and they're trying to figure out what to like how to sort of incorporate into that into their identity. We're seeing a lot of we see teens now, so we see some people who are trying to work through gender identity issues, you know, a lot of non-binary kids these days who need people to talk to who sort of
Now, just
understand their
for
gender journey.
the public, a non-binary, what would that mean?
So somebody who identifies as neither male nor female,
Okay.
or any variety of in between, you know.
Okay. So let's
So
say,
yeah, so
go ahead.
we see a lot of different
I can
things. And
imagine.
then a lot of times, yeah, and then I'd spend a lot of time with other therapists. So I do some supervision groups where we talk about cases and like what do people need and how do we help somebody in X, Y, or Z situation.
When
So yeah.
typically, what do these meetings look like? I mean, is it round table, 5, 6, or 10, 12? How many people are there usually?
So in order to, this is a funny rule that I just figured out when I started doing group supervisions for people who were not my employees, is that for sex therapy certification, for it to count towards the certification, you can have no more than 4 people in the group.
Okay. Now,
So they're small groups.
why did you come to that decision?
Oh, I didn't come to it. I just think like people who are seeing me for supervision want to get sex therapy
Yeah,
certification.
sure.
And the organization came up with that rule.
Ah, the
I would
organization.
not
Okay.
have chosen that rule.
Okay. I see.
That would not be my choice.
Why?
Because I feel like there's a lot of value in having like 5 or 6 people in a group
Yeah,
to talk about
I would think so
and to
too.
get a lot of different perspectives. And when I do my group supervision with my employees, we have 6 clinicians in the room and a lot of different perspectives and a lot of different experiences. And I think it's really helpful.
Sure. I wanted to a little get some information. I'm not sure if you would be willing to talk about it. A case that you've had, a person who the case, we'll talk about the case, I guess it is the case person, same thing, very critical for you. That
So
you, yeah.
I can't talk about cases because of HIPAA.
Okay.
So I can tell you about my own life, which is kinky
Okay.
and twisted in itself, but I can't
Sure.
tell you about anybody
All right,
else's.
no, that I mean, what becomes critical for you?
I mean, so I have had this whole complicated journey of being involved in the BDSM community for tw over 20 years. I'm also polyamorous, and I have a number of different partners, and I've explored a whole lot of different things, and it's had its ups and downs. And I have kids, so there's also the like a lot of people end up having questions about like how does that work, and mostly it's just the kids find this normal, and we
Yeah.
all sort of laugh at the TV, and they're all like, you know what would solve this problem? Polyamory, because like every show has a love triangle,
Yeah.
so things like that.
Yeah, every show has a love triangle. Every life has a love triangle. People who come to me are all involved. They come to me because there's a triangle, there's a problem. They see it as a problem. Usually the people who come to me experience the third party as a not fun, but a problem. And that is a different mindset than what you're talking about. What exactly is polyamory?
So polyamory is just the openness to experience multiple deep loving relationships. And a lot of times it doesn't work out that way. Like just because you are open to multiple deep loving relationships, oftentimes you just sort of end up dating casually just like everybody else. But
Yeah.
you know, oftentimes there are sort of long, deep relationships. So I'm married. My marriage is sort of drifting apart slowly. We've been together for 19 years.
Okay, so this is
I live with
recent.
my
Is it a
husband.
recent drifting?
So we've lived together with his girlfriend and her kids for 7 years, and they share a bedroom, and I don't share a bedroom with him. And so it's like that sort of split has happened. He and I
Okay.
both fell really hard for other people about 10 years ago. And you know, and the shift has been very slow and very gentle. And I still feel close to him, like he's my friend and he's my co-parent, but it's not like a romantic relationship.
Okay. In polyamory, do you because there's I'm at two minds about polyamory because With my experience, I have never had an experience where it was as you describe, you know, the definition of having a very deep relationship with more than one person. I have never seen or know of anyone who has experienced that. And my question is, you know, many people think that polyamory is just, okay, go and have an orgy. But and it may have started in history that way, depending on what cultural groups, you know, you talk to. But today, polyamory is a very distinct practice. It means a specific thing. And I'm wondering how common it is. How, I mean, can you travel any city in the world and find a group that's polyamorous? Just like Argentine tango, I dance. I know where to go anywhere I travel. Is that the case with polyamory?
Well, so it's interesting. Like the label polyamory wasn't invented until the 90s. And that's not to say that polyamory hasn't existed throughout time. Like, you know, there have been a number of cultures where marriages with multiple people were common. There's been a number of cultures where affairs, where everybody knows the affair is happening, are common. And that is also a form of polyamory. If like if those things are happening and nobody's like throwing a fit and leaving, like you have polyamory, right? So so I think we think of it as this like distinct newfangled thing, but I think it's always existed. And I think when you listen to people's stories of their lives, like it happens a lot. And I'm, you know, the longer people live, the more times people fall in love. And I think that,
Isn't that a great you know, you get old. But the longer I live, the more I have the chance to fall in love. I like that.
And I think the thing that polyamory allows is for you to fall in love and not have to lose everybody that you loved before. Because you don't necessarily not love them. Like I've seen it happen. I've seen it work. I've seen people stay together for long periods of time. I do think relationships shift. Because I think that, you know, we have this term in polyamory called new relationship energy, which is basically that sort of high where you're just falling in love with a new person. And that's not a thing that lasts in most relationships. I have not seen that sort of new relationship high last more than a few years.
A few years, that's a long time. I thought very much less.
I usually say, based on a class I took on the neurobiology of love, probably 10 years ago, that it lasts 18 months to 2 years.
Now that sounds normal to me. 18 months.
I think when people, when people aren't able to see each other as much, like like if they are in long distance relationships, that sort of limerence periods can last longer, because you don't get the like being around somebody all the time to get annoyed with their habits.
I'm going to take you on another road here, because as you were talking, I was thinking, how in, because, you know, we were talking before I started recording and I was telling you I live in Rome, and you said, well, do you like it? And we didn't get much farther than that, but we do have the Vatican in this city. And I was thinking, well, how conditioned is a person's sexual mindset in relation, well, conditioned by their religion? Do you find that in your practice?
Well, I find that in my life. And again, this is a thing that, you know, I can't really talk about my clients, but I can talk about my life. And this is a big issue, particularly for me with Catholicism recently, because so I, as I said, me and my husband both fell very hard in love with people 10 years ago. And my partner of, you know, would have been 10 years this month, or maybe next month. Anyway, he, during the pandemic, he started going to church in person without telling me. And then he converted to Catholicism. And at midnight on a Sunday night before I started my work week, he says to me, I've converted to Catholicism and I can't be polyamorous anymore.
Oh my God. Well, that's a, that's a change, isn't it?
I mean, So I feel like I was cheated on with the Catholic Church. I have a lot of feelings about
Oh, I bet you do. We
this.
all
I mean, he
do.
could have gone and slept with anyone, but instead he was secretly meeting up with the church.
I love it. I know this is a
And I
big
think it's been
problem.
terrible for him as a person because I feel like there's this discouragement of following your own passion and following your own joy. And there's this, if you're doing that, you should feel ashamed of yourself.
Well, all right, you said one of the key magic words. When you talk of joy, and elation, and that is, in my experience, okay, with all of the clients that I've had, it's very, very on the same level as sp high spiritual vibration. That's the word that is used, joy. And so, I mean, I don't know how to say this without, well, I'll just say it. Many people have, well, the orgasm in and of itself is a highly spiritual experience. And when you talk about spirituality, the next thing, I don't want to say the next best thing, but the very close cousin would be an established institutional religion. And that's where the problems lie. You know, that is really where the problems lie. I'm sorry that you had to go through that. Well, gee, well, what about him? Well, did he come out alive in his transformation? Is he now able to experience a one-to-one relationship going back to the
He hasn't
one-to-one?
even been looking for that.
Ah.
He doesn't know what he's doing.
Ah.
He's got a lot of complicated feelings and he doesn't know what he wants and he's in therapy and that's good.
Oh,
But
good.
I mean I feel like there's this another important point of like sex as a spiritual
Yeah.
experience. And it's a thing we don't talk about. And I think it's a really thing. It's a thing we need to talk about.
Of
The
course.
other thing, which is not on my bio on my website that I sent you, and also wasn't even true when we scheduled this appointment, is that I am a also I recently completed the Urban Tantra Professional Training
I
Program
was
with
going to
Barbara
ask
Corella.
you. I was going to ask you about that. I had a tantrist here a couple of months ago. Is that a normal development for people in your profession, or is this a specific
No.
choice?
It's a specific choice. Most of the people in my profession don't do a lot of work with tantra, and they do something called sensate focus,
Yes.
where the idea is to involve mindfulness and focus on touch, but it's very sort of narrow. It
Yes,
focuses
it's
on
very
like we
narrow.
want to touch these parts and then these parts and then these parts. We want to slowly accustom you to these particular kinds of touch where you can get back to the place where intercourse is good, right? And it still seems to view intercourse as the pinnacle
Right.
of sex. And for me, pleasure is always the goal.
Yeah.
Pleasure over orgasm, like pleasure is more important, right? And because sometimes people have orgasms they don't even enjoy.
Right.
They nobody tells you that, but
Oh,
that is
I've
the
this is
thing.
the first time I've heard of that.
Yeah, no, that is a thing. And it's also very complicated for people who've been sexually assaulted, who they
Right.
sometimes will have an orgasm, but it's not, it doesn't mean it was a pleasant experience. It means
Probably
they
with
had an
guilt.
involuntary muscle
Yeah,
spasm,
yeah.
right? So what we want to talk about is like how do we center things that feel good? And I think that also part of that is about shifting our focus from, you know, it has to be focused on the genitals and it has to involve penetration. Like your whole body can be a sexual organ. You can have
Right.
orgasms of all different kinds. You can have pleasure of all different kinds. And we don't teach people about the breadth
Right.
of what is available as far as sexuality. And I think it's interesting because it's like there's these two different ways of getting you to this different place. Well, there's multiple different ways, but I feel like there's the tantra world, which is about sort of breathing into your different chakras and focusing on different
It's
areas of your
based on
body.
a
And then
different
there's the
culture,
kink worlds,
yeah. And then there's the
right? And
kink
there's the
world.
kink worlds. at where you're also focusing your sexual attention on different kinds of touch and
Of
different things, but
course.
we think of them as so far apart,
And
right?
well, in many people's minds, they are so far apart. One seems to lean more towards the spiritual and one towards the more material, if you could use that word. Yeah.
But I think that both of them, at least for the submissive, can be fundamentally about surrender, right?
Ah.
Because Tantra can be
Oh.
about surrender to the universe
Right.
and really
Right.
like embracing all these different sensations, right? And
Right.
then BDSM as a submissive is about surrendering to a person. But oftentimes, when you're in that place, when you're in that kink headspace, that person is like a deity to you. And you
Yeah.
are worshiping
Oh,
them in a
yeah.
form,
That's
right?
right. Good for you. Yeah.
So there is this way that like BDSM can almost be your own personal religion, and you have to sort of look at it from like, how do we make sure we can stay grounded enough to like to see when the
Yeah.
problematic stuff is happening,
Yeah,
because sometimes people are so hungry for that
it's
that they'll do
interesting
things that
to
like
hear
don't work
you.
out well.
The ladies and gentlemen, you cannot see her, but I'm seeing her face expressions, her eyes that go up when talking about her. So it's really interesting to see while you speak that you get into the pleasure of creating one room, one kinky room, where there is pleasure, joy, and it can be your religion. And I don't like to separate sex from a spiritual sensation. And what pleasure is based on the senses, the smell, all the senses, any sense you have, even your intuition. And that doesn't go out the room when you're having some kind of sexual pleasure or encounter with someone. How wonderful this is to talk about. I would love to go on and on, but I hate to, abuse of your time. Tamara, thank you so much for being with us. And tell us where people can find you, your website, perhaps.
So my website is tamarapinkus.com, and historically, we've done primarily just individual and relationship psychotherapy, but we're working on putting together more educational programs. So I'm hoping to help people sort of get in touch with, like, how do we access these pleasurable states, and how do we really figure out how to feel this joy in our bodies after we've been told culturally that we're not supposed to in a lot of ways. So I'm hoping you'll come and check out our blog and try. Sign up for our mailing list, and also we have a ton of resources on our resource page. So come check it out.
Great. Thank you so much. I hope we'll have the opportunity to again talk. Bye-bye, Tamara.